This podcast is brought to you by Money Control. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of In the News. I'm your host, Kirtana Tiwari, and I'll get you the latest developments from India and around the world. Today is November 13th, and we'll be talking about India's loan growth, which drops to demonetization lows. We'll also be talking about yet another privacy issue from Facebook that the iOS users are facing. Finally, Supreme Court brings CGI's office under the ambit of RTI Act. India's financial sector continues to see a lot of trouble because the loan growth rates have dropped to demonetization lows of 6%. And I have Ruchira with me to explain what exactly happened. Hi, Ruchira.
Hi, Kirtana.
Why exactly has the loan growth dropped so much?
A Credit Suisse report has said that loan growth in India has fallen to 6%. In Q2 of FY20, which is the July to September quarter that just passed. This could have something to do with the crisis in the NBFC sector. Okay. As most people know, last year after IL&FS defaulted on several repayments, okay, the entire NBFC sector saw a liquidity crisis, or rather a lot of investors feared whether loans would be repaid, which triggered a feeling of unease in the entire sector. So in the quarter that recently ended, in the July to September quarter, the loan growth fell to 6%. Okay. This is a level that was last seen during demonetization in 2016. Just after demonetization, rather, would be a better way of putting it.
Okay.
So in the same period last year, which is Q2 of FY19, the same number was 11%.
Okay.
So definitely the crisis in the NBFC sector and this fall in loan growth could potentially be connected. It is also interesting to note that lending to NBFCs since the crisis last year has increased.
Okay.
Yeah, so it has actually increased 30% year on year.
Okay.
And so the total exposure of banks to NBFCs at this point is 8.5%.
Ruchira, have they said anything else about the NBFC crisis and if we would see any improvement in that front?
They have said more about the NBFC crisis, but they haven't exactly mentioned whether there will be an improvement in the situation. They have given a breakdown of what kinds of banks have how much exposure to NBFCs. Okay. For instance, they say that most PSUs, public sector banks, have a 10 to 16% exposure to NBFCs, which is growing 15 to 13% year on year.
Okay.
And most low LDR banks are seeing stronger growth.
Okay.
And they've also pointed out that lending by NBFCs themselves, so the rate of disbursement by NBFCs, has fallen 36% since the same period last year.
Okay.
Which of course links back to the roughly to the time when the IL&FS crisis began.
Okay. So interestingly, the report is showing how the NBFC crisis is affecting all these numbers. Has the report also included any outlook on what may happen in the future?
No, the report has not given any outlook as such for the future. They have just provided data for what has happened in the quarter that has just gone past, and they have given a comparison as to how it compares with the previous quarters. So, yes, but even just the numbers do give us a fairly good insight into the state of the economy, which, of course, at the moment, everyone is worried about, and even the finance ministry has been making a lot of efforts to give different industries, whether it's real estate or the auto sector.
Yeah.
So definitely this is a report that is worth paying attention to.
Okay. Thank you so much for those updates, Ruchira. privacy issues with regard to Facebook is never ending, and we've come across another bug in Facebook which opens the camera app in the background for iOS users. I have with me Shraddha Sharma, who can talk to me more about this. Hi Shraddha.
Hi Kirtana.
Can you tell us more about what exactly happened here?
What Edward Snowden was worried about, in a way, you know, surveillance, but that was by the CIA. But in this thing, we are talking about a private organization, Facebook, which already doesn't have high standards, you know, high reputation in standards of privacy, as we know.
Yeah.
So what we know about Facebook is that the Facebook app, when you are using it on your iPhone, it used to operate the camera. So we know about an iPhone user, but we won't be surprised if, you know, tomorrow it comes up for Android users as well. So Facebook users took to Twitter that their phone cameras, you know, automatically got activated when they were using the Facebook app. And after that long lot of outrage, Facebook actually acknowledged it and responded that they are trying to fix the bug that was causing this issue. Basically, they have accepted it that the phone camera was being operated by the Facebook app.
Okay.
So in a way, you wouldn't even know that it's recording you from the front camera or the back camera. So it's just a major privacy violation.
But how did the users find out that the camera got activated?
It was to do with the landscape and the portrait screens when they kept while using the app.
Okay.
So after watching a video in full screen on Facebook, they observed that the layout changed itself.
Oh.
And when they used to come back to the normal screen mode, they experienced that the layout moved towards the right side, you know, and the phone camera got popped up on its own.
Oh.
So this is what we know from the Twitter users, that they discovered this thing happening, and the, you know, the camera was operating on its own.
Okay.
So we have no evidence in terms of photos and videos being uploaded due to this bug, but this is basically what the iPhone users have told.
And are the users from any specific country, or is it all over the world?
So instead of it being area specific, it is affecting more of, you know, specific iOS users. So basically, we know that iPhones running iOS 13.2.2 showed that the camera was running in the background.
Okay.
While operators of 13.1.3 did not seem to be affected. You know, if actually the app tried to operate the camera on its own, it was blocking it in a way. So a particular set of users are experiencing it, and so it might be global for iOS users.
Okay. This is certainly very worrying.
Absolutely.
Moving on, the Supreme Court has ruled that the CJI, that is the Chief Justice of India, also comes under the ambit of the RTI Act. Shraddha, can you give us a bit of background about this case?
So basically, the landmark judgment by the Supreme Court that has come today has to do with the 2010 judgment by the High Court that said that the office of the Chief Justice of India comes under the ambit of the Right to Information Act, saying that the judicial independence is not a privilege.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a responsibility that is upon him. So that time, the Chief Justice, K.G. Balakrishnan, who has been opposed to the disclosure of information under the RTI, and there was a plea also against, you know, giving too much transparency, and it might undermine the judicial independence in a way.
Okay.
So now Supreme Court has said that, yes, the Chief Justice of India will come under the RTI Act with certain conditions. So there'll be a judicial independence as well.
Okay. So this would mean that if there is an RTI related to judicial matters, the CJI will be answerable to such questions?
So basically, they have said that transparency will be there.
Okay.
So the CJI will be answerable to RTI queries. So the 5-judge constitution bench was also, you know, headed by the CJI right now, Ranjan Gogoi, who is retiring on the November 17th.
Okay.
And he had dismissed 3 appeals by Secretary General of the Supreme Court and the Central Public Information Officer of the Supreme Court. And he has basically said that transparency doesn't undermine judicial independence. However, confidentiality and right to privacy stays. And it has to be maintained. So it can't be used as a tool of, you know, surveillance.
Okay.
So you You can't basically exploit RTI in terms of, you know, getting too much information about CGIs. But, you know, of course, they are answerable to the public is what the Supreme Court meant.
Okay. Right. Shraddha, isn't it a little weird that the CGI has given a verdict on the CGI position?
So basically, it comes under the doctrine of necessity where, you know, the constitutional body actually takes a decision for its own cause. Okay. So it's actually a very interesting legal study that says that, you know, how constitutional bodies can actually take decisions that are to do with their own working or, you know, other matters of the body.
Okay, that's very interesting. Thank you so much, Shraddha, for all these updates.
Thank you, Kirtana, for having me.
So these were the developments for today. As of November 14th, we'll be looking forward to two important Supreme Court cases. The Supreme Court of India will deliver its verdict on petitions seeking a review of its judgment giving a clean chit to Narendra Modi government in the Rafael fighter jet deal. The pleas for this case was filed by former Union Ministers Yashwant Sinha, Arun Shauri and activist lawyer Prashant Bhushan. And it seeks the re-examination of the court findings that there was no occasion to doubt the decision-making process in the procurement of 36 Rafael fighter jets from the French firm Dassault Aviation. The Apex Court will also deliver its verdict on 65 petitions seeking re-examination of its earlier decision to allow entry of women of all age group in Kerala's Sabarimala temple. The petitions were filed after its verdict sparked violent protests in Kerala.
And now a word on our subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app. The offer is available on Android and the web.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of In the News. If you have any queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. That's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.